Appreciate those kind words. And I especially appreciate the opportunity to be with you ladies. Lucy and I talk about it often and feel badly about it as often, that there are so many of the staff and couples here in Colorado Springs, and we don't get to know you, and it's frustrating, I think. And we sometimes remonstrate or make up our minds we're going to do certain things, and we don't get them done. You know, I think that some of us who travel, and we get prayed for more than we deserve, I think that it's more strenuous to be home in Colorado Springs than it is to travel, for instance. When you're home, you have your family. And incidentally, I'd just like to put the kibosh on a rumor I'd heard as we were coming through life, that you're married and there's the two of you. Then the children come along and finally they grow up and then they leave and then it's back just the two of you like it was when you started. Oh, no, it's not. I thought when they got married, they left. And even if they're out of town, they're still with you. Then you have another responsibility you feel, and that's for your grandchildren. And we had six kids, and we had them for our whole lifetime, and you have to take that into consideration. That's one thing. And, of course, we love it. Then there's whatever ministry you have as a couple. There's your church. There's your business. The fact that we live in a tourist center, and people are coming through all the time, and we just don't get to see one another much. Maybe you do, but we don't feel like we get to see many of the gang, and so we're happy for an opportunity like this. I know some of the overseas people may come home and be in the Springs for a year, and I won't see them at all, whereas overseas I may have seen them for a week or two. So it's the way it works. But there's a lot more pressure, I think, at least on me, and I think some of us who travel at home, no place we'd rather be, because everything you want is at home. But same time, a lot of pressures for time. So I'm happy to have the opportunity to share with you this morning. And I wish it could be more of a two-way street where you could share with me and with us and with Lucy and me. But it's a one-way street, so, and I made a few notes here. Try to bail my hay so it follows some kind of order. I want to share with you on the subject that I think is the key to usefulness in the Christian life, and probably the greatest single continuing struggle and battle down through life, and still results in the greatest joy. At the same time, it seems to be a periodic struggle. And it can be all summed up in one word, and this is one of the two main messages I have in my lifetime, and it's the word surrender. The key to usefulness, peace in your heart, joy. It's a big word, not so easy to do sometimes, but always results in the experience that the will of God is good, acceptable, and perfect. Doss used to like to say that God can do more through one person who's 100% yielded than he can through 100 who only 90% yielded. Surrender is another word for yieldedness. Some years back, I came to me by somebody else, and somebody asked Lucy why she felt the Lord had used her husband to some extent. And the answer reported to me was that she said, well, I think perhaps the key thing is he's been available. Perhaps God could have used others, but I haven't been available. Well, I'd have to add to that, it was with kicking and screaming sometimes, and just not all that readily submissive. But still, in the end, say, okay, Lord, I'll do it. Now, the central problem with all of us, though we don't like to admit it, but the central problem in the human race is self-centeredness, self-assertiveness. It started with Satan. Isaiah 14, I'll just read that to us to review. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. And sin entered the universe. God put Adam and Eve in the garden and gave them great liberty and authority. In fact, they could eat of all the trees of the garden except one. You know, the Bible has to be the Word of God because there's so many little insights in ways that are true to life. What was the one thing that occupied their attention? Assuming there were 200 trees, were they just rejoicing in the 199 they could eat from? What was the one thing that Satan got to bug them, the one thing they couldn't do? Like a little dog we used to have, nicest, quietest little dog. The moment you turned the back, it was trying to dig its way out of the fence. We could have bought three more lots and put a fence around, but still, that wouldn't have been big enough. That dog would get out. You could have had a square mile. And rather than enjoying what it did have, it would always be looking for what it didn't have. Human nature, isn't it? And we tend to be like that, don't we? That one thing that we can't have or that frustrates us, that's a thing that occupies our attention rather than all the things we could have. Well, Satan made the temptation in the garden and said, look, if you eat, you'll be as gods, knowing good and evil. Put yourself at the center, assert yourself. And they did that, and sin entered the human race. And the result, though we don't like the term of it, there is in all of us something to be little gods. And it's sort of discouraging when you see how you treat your children and how you worry about your husband and some of these other things and how we want to be God. Maybe we don't want to be, but we do. And Gothard says that worry is taking upon yourself responsibilities that God never intended. Yeah. I read the other day about a fellow who went to the psychiatrist, and the problem, the psychiatrist says, I don't believe I know your problem. In order to understand it, I think you better start at the beginning. The fellow said, all right. In the beginning, I made heaven and the earth. Well, it wouldn't be as blatant as that. But I thought to myself as I read that little joke, there's a grain of truth in that, you know. This is sin. That's the heart of the problem. Self-centered. Well, if self-centeredness and self-assertiveness is a central problem, then self-surrender is the central solution. Or in other words, just to let God be God. James said over there in James 4:7, he said, submit yourselves therefore to God. And I think that's just what it means. Let God be God. Now take the matter of the grace of God, for instance. It talks in Hebrews 12 about failing in, lest any man fail of the grace of God. How would you fail of the grace of God? Well, now grace is God doing something for you and not you doing something for God. For instance, how are we saved? We're not saved by faith, we're saved by grace, right? Through faith. Faith takes what grace offers. Grace is another face of God's love. It's what God does to the undeserving. God wants to do something for people. And surrender is letting him do it. It's God doing something for you. One of my friends said, I know why it is that so many Christian workers wear out. I said, why is that? He said, well, they're trying to serve God and serve people, always doing, 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 and you can't do that continually unless you let God do something for you. You let God do something for you first, then you do something for others. got to let God be God. And when we're doing this, we all know that the muscles in our shoulders seem to relax a little bit. The headache dissipates a little. And we can begin to feel ourselves relax over all over just a little bit. And we stop a minute and we say, whoa. Now God is a loving God. God who wants to help the undeserving. He wants to do something for me. I'm going to let him do it. Or for that child that's giving me so much trouble right now. Or that problem that's just bugging the daylights out of me. God can, you think he can take care of that child all by himself without you? Can God take care of that problem all by himself without me? His understanding is infinite. He never wearies. Well, yeah, of course he can. But there is a constant, I don't know about you, going back and forth between taking myself and looking to the Lord and taking it back on myself and going back to the Lord again. I think there's where some of the struggle is. Do you sense that in your life? So, let God be God to you. The whole thing, salvation, sanctification, glorification, the whole business is by grace through faith, isn't it? Raising kids, it's by grace through faith. I have people, I say, well, tell me, what's the secret of raising kids? Is it simple? Or we take upon ourselves responsibilities God didn't intend. And I think our navigators were very conscientious parents. And we should be. We try hard. We try harder. We always think we're second best, I think. In fact, I sometimes think navigator wives belong to Avis. Never hurts. Because they all feel themselves second best. You? Somehow or other, most other wives are first best and you're second. So you try harder. Well, okay, but let's let God work. Let God be God in your life. Let God be God to your husband. Maybe you don't have to fight for him support him, encourage him, yes, but maybe also God can look out for your husband. How about your children? Well, I know this. If God doesn't look out for them, I don't care how good a mother you are, you're in trouble. Right? You know that. You can't be with them every moment of the day. And the forces that are bringing to bear on our children these days, the things that they came home with, they didn't learn from us. Either got it at school or the radio, but it was coming through the keyhole and under the door some way. Things that got into our home, we didn't bring there. And you can't babysit them until they're 18. I mean, God has to be in the picture somewhere. Let God be God to your children. So surrender. Surrender. That's what I want to share with you a little bit. Surrender. What does it mean? Well, to me, surrender to God means a big yes followed by a lot of smaller yeses. All kinds of smaller yeses. Luke 9:23. If any man will come after me, that's the big choice. That's the big yes. A decision that I will be a follower of Jesus Christ. Yes, I will. I will be a disciple of his. That's the big choice. I'm going to spend my life as a follower of Jesus. That's a big choice. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross. Say no to this and yes to that. No to this and yes to that. A lot of continuous smaller decisions in the light of the big one. Daily, it says in Luke 9:23. Every day we've got them to make. No to this, yes to that, don't we? Romans 12:1-2, I think, is perhaps a pivotal passage on this. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Now, the big yes, that's the major choice, they call it, a major choice. It's the big decision in which all other decisions fit. It's kind of like marriage. They stand up there and face each other, and one says, I give you my bank account, and the other one says, I give you my cooking ability. And both are quite impoverished as far as that's concerned. Like one was, he was complaining to, you don't cook like my mother. And she said, neither do you make dough like my dad. No, so I can give you my little bank account or whatever it is. I read the other day Charles Allen's little book that when he got married, he had $30. His wife had $100. His wife-to-be had $100. Said, look, just spend it on clothes or whatever you need. Oh, no, she said, we're going to share equally. So we're going to put it all together, pool our resources, and we'll share equally. He said it was the smartest thing she's ever done because they've shared equally ever since, and it's the last money she ever put into the pot. So I don't give you my money, my cooking ability, or anything. I give you me. That's what you're saying if you're married, right? I give you me. That's the big yes, which is followed by hundreds of smaller yeses along life's road within the big yes. We come to God and we say, I give you me. That's the big yes. The first big yes for me was when I was... I always have to look at Lucy and say, was I 18 or was I 19? I forget. But somewhere in there, late teens, when beside my bed one night I just got out and on my knees and received Jesus Christ into my life as my Savior. That was a big overall commitment. It was sometime later, and I don't know how long later, and sometime, I always keep saying, Lucy and I are going to sit down and actually write out this history, so I keep my facts straight. That's the only trouble speaking where she's present. I get straightened out on the facts later, and in fact, I like the way I tell it better than the way it maybe really happened. But the two of us, and I presume our late teens, yeah, right in there somewhere, I went to a youth meeting one night, and youth evangelist spoke and gave an opportunity for commitment, dedication of your lives to wherever the Lord would lead. And Lucy and I went forward. And it was kind of like saying, we give you us. And that was a big decision. That was a big choice in which a lot of other choices now have followed. But of course, we never dreamed. A couple of little kids, she from the, I don't know if you would say the wrong end of the tracks, me from the town, and the wrong side of the tracks, me from a little chubby old boy off the farm. We never dreamed the adventure that would follow a couple of big choices. Right? You too. I know you experienced the same thing. Never dreamed the adventure. Well, they've been followed by a lot of smaller yeses, and I thought I'd just talk with you a little bit about the smaller yeses along life's way. One had to do with the will of God. We came to know the Lord up in Modesto, California, and it was a little church, and sort of the thing to do to go to Biola, Bible Institute of Los Angeles. I had 2 years of junior college and wanted to go to Cal Berkeley, and I wanted to be a lawyer. Well, I thought it'd be not good if we went down to Biola for a year and got a little Bible background before we went to Berkeley. And Lucy was going to go, and I thought it'd be kind of good if I went along and kept her from being homesick. We got down there, and the first 3 days, I was so homesick. I can't tell you how homesick I was. I can see it yet. Biola that time was right down the center of L.A., next to the Los Angeles Library, City Library. We went for a walk over there and sat on a bench. And instead of my comforting my girlfriend, she was comforting me. I was homesick. Well, they had rather strict rules in those days. I don't know if they still have them out there in Biola or not. One thing, you could date once a week. That was Friday nights. And you had to be in at 10:30. And even then, sometimes we decided the Lord would come first, and there may be some time for a Bible study meeting, or I could speak somewhere, and that came first. But there came a time when I had a year to go, and for various reasons, we thought, and in the meantime, I'd met Doss and was living in his home and so on, and we felt, and I won't go into all that because that isn't the important thing at the moment, that the Lord would have us to get married. But you needed to have permission from the faculty to get married. Otherwise, you'd have to stay out of school a year, and then you could come back. And we wanted to get married and continue our education and finish up so that we could go and take the Navigator work in Seattle, Washington. So I wrote a letter to the faculty and explained our situation and told them we would abide by their decision. We prayed about this. Well, the decision came back negative. No, he could not. So we just left it there, took it to the Lord, and prayed about it, and said, well, Lord, when the time comes, you do something special for us. You know how that is. Probably in your marriage, you ask the Lord something similar. To give you, we're in love, we want to get married, but show us something special as to when it ought to be. Well, the dean called me in one day. He said, Lauren, I never have felt right about that decision we made as a faculty. We've decided to reverse our decision, make an exception in your case, and you kids are free to get married. Well, that was one of those lessons along life's way of the will of God, letting God work out his will for you. And that has stuck with us, I think, down to this day. We try to remember not to force it, not to push it, but to let God work out his will for you. Surrender. Just surrender to the will of God. And God will work for you. He does, doesn't he? Yeah, and you ever felt like you're boxed in? I think most of my life looked like I was boxed in. God has you boxed in. And the wall's too high to jump over. There's only one thing, you've got to wait for the Lord. That's all. Till he opens the door, till he moves the side of the box, or gives you strength to leap over the wall, as it says in Psalm 18. But to wait for the will of God. Yeah, that's what a lesson to remember. Don't always remember it. But when we do, it's always for our good, isn't it? And it's good, acceptable, perfect, and exciting. If I can add a little bit to Romans 12:2. Then in those days, of course, it had to do with God supplying our needs. Doss's invitation to me to come to live with him was there'd be no salary. We'd share and share alike. We'd live in his home, and what came in, we'd share. What didn't, we'd share what didn't come in. So time came to get married, and the faculty was for it. Doss thought it was okay. We certainly felt it was all right. Parents, it was okay. We had everything but money. Preacher was willing. And I have told some of you this, but there again was an opportunity to say these yeses to God, to move ahead by faith, as it has to do with material things. We were going to get married Sunday morning after church. Our feeling in those days was that some people that we would invite who felt they ought to come to the wedding would have to come to church to get to the wedding, and we get them under the sound of the gospel. So they approved Doss as the speaker for that Sunday morning and a gospel message. That was our thought processes. Saturday afternoon, we were walking uptown, and talking and we prayed, and we picked out a ring. We didn't have the money to buy it. And we talked about how the fact that, well, the Lord said he'll supply all our needs. Well, we didn't need it on Saturday. We needed it on Sunday. And so that when we needed it, we'd have it. And some other verses we claim. Well, that afternoon, and Lucy's got a record of these things, of who gave us what. But somebody, and if you know, in fact, who was sent us that little check, Mom? You remember? Your aunt. Oh, yeah. Bless her heart. We were there, and she died just 6 weeks ago. Sent us a check, and nobody knew about this except God, Lucy, and me. It was enough to go down and buy that ring we had picked out, and it cost, as I recall, $32. That's a pretty expensive ring. Of course, it cost you $132 now, but... we went down and picked it out. Well, the next morning, as I was waiting down there in front of the church for my responsibility to come down the aisle, I had a total of $2.21 in my pocket. That's all the cash I had. I don't think I've ever asked you, did you have any? No, you didn't have any. She had a bicycle, but it was a girl's bicycle. It'd be hard for both of us to ride that. So there we stood, $2.21 in my pocket. We were going to go off on a honeymoon. Didn't know how we were going to do that. Had prayed about it, but felt it was God's will. And we were standing there in the will of God. I remember meditating right during the service on Romans 8:32. He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? He's given me this wonderful girl. He'll give me the money we need to do what we ought to do as far as the honeymoon is concerned. Well, you know how it is. Maybe it happened at your wedding, but people filed by and somebody shook hands and you felt something there. And you hung on to it and put it in your pocket. And someone else came along and handed you an envelope and you put that in here. And I think her brother-in-law offered his car for the first night we stayed nearby. Then we took a Greyhound bus for our up to Mount Hermon, California, for our honeymoon. And she had to remind me years later, I was so ecstatic, I didn't remember we had stood up all the way up there to Mount Hermon, 2.5 hours or three. I had no idea. I probably was about 3 inches above the floor anyway. So, God supplying your needs. Well, the time came for us to go to Seattle. We put our gear in one box and a baby buggy because we didn't waste any time. We were married on June 13th. Tom was born on March 13th. So that figures out 9 months to the day. And, of course, probably some of the older ladies around the church were... But Beverly delayed a little. She was born 12 months and 5 days later. So... after that, though, we got a little tired and we let a little time elapse and we could have had 7 or 8 kids instead of 6. But it was a lot of fun. So we got up there with the baby buggy, this stuff. So our first navigator home, where are we going to find? We'll find a home to rent that was brand new, no furniture. So we borrowed a bed, the kind that the sides fold up and when you're in it, you roll together. You don't mind being together, but you know what I mean? It's kind of hard all night to stay on your own side, you know, and get a little room. And we got a little square table and 2 stools. I said, hey, Lucy, do we have those stools around? She said, yeah. I don't think I've ever come to a meeting with a show and tell before. But would you believe it? This is one of those 2 stools. In fact, I think it's the only relic we've got of those days, except Lucy and me. But so we had 2 of these, and this is what we sat on except the bed. And that square table. Oh, there was one more thing. Oh, if we'd have kept that, it'd have been worth some money. It was one of those old ice boxes with the lid on the top. I mean, Lucy goes down to auctions, I think, looking for those things now. If we'd have kept that. It was the kind of a thing when you put the ice in, there was no more room for food. And when the ice was room for food, there was no ice. So it was really a kick. So anyway, we started. The mailman. Was it the mailman or the milkman came to the door and asked you, mailman? Milkman. And said, see, your furniture hasn't arrived yet. He says, no, it hadn't arrived. It was bare floors, no carpet, nothing on the windows. We finally got $10 and went down to Penny's, and I brought some curtains, and we put those curtains up, and we sat down on the floor and really admired those curtains. That was terrific. Well, you know, lots of the little yeses along life. At the time, maybe to say yes to a circumstance or to walk into something is a struggle. But then you look back and you see the adventure that God made of it. I know that, from what I'm told, some of you may be struggling financially. Well, there's still a God in heaven. And your resource is not the navigators, or your parents, or an uncle. It's still God in heaven. And he still does want to do things for you. He's still a gracious God. And he wants to help in time of need. So that's where we look. I remember being in Czechoslovakia talking with a professor, former professor, who had been too active in his witness, so they took away his professorship and made him a researcher, with a consequent reduction in salary. I said, how do you feel about it? Well, he said, first place, every professor in the university knows why this happened to me, and so that's a testimony. But he said, financially, he said, the government may pay my salary, but God meets my needs. So those yeses along life's way, and it makes it's an adventure. It's a struggle at the time, perhaps. And then if you wait long enough, you can come some 30 years later and you can have your own little show and tell. So you might want to look around the house and see what you want to keep for all these years. You know, it looks awful. You know, that mom, we got to fix that up a little bit. Or this has been paid in, though, since then, hasn't it? Yeah. I wonder if it needs some Elmer's glue. Most everything we... Yeah, it does, sure enough. Where's my do list here? Elmer's glue. Another one of those little yeses had to do with submission to Doss Trotman. There was no doubt about the fact that Doss loved me. Lucy and I were talking about it, I think, just this week. He, for some reason or other, he really did love me. But he was also tough. In fact, a lot tougher than I thought he needed to be sometimes. It seemed as though I would do 10 things, and 9 were right, and 1 was wrong, and what would I hear about? The 1 was wrong. I mean, it wasn't in a little soft tone of voice either. What? And finally the time came I thought I had enough of that. Oh, I tried verses like, it's good for man to bear the yoke in his youth, and that would last me for a couple days. And what tribulation would do for you, and that would last for a few days. But I just got increasingly tired. I thought, well, man, I don't have to do this. I can go somewhere else, and I could. And I don't know if I want to continue this or not. It built up in my mind till it became a real crisis issue. So I was up at Hume Lake, California, at this conference ground, and there's a rock, huge boulders out there by the edge of the lake. And I got out on one of those boulders one day and got some time with the Lord and said, Lord, I've had enough of this. I know I don't have to stay with him. There are other things in this world to do. But somehow or other, I don't know if I knew about surrender or what, I had the fortune or the sense or the guiding of the Spirit to say, well, Lord, what do you want me to do? What shall I do? And through some scriptures that just linked in with other things and providential circumstances in my life, it was very clear that I was to stick with him, even if it meant to shine his shoes. Well, there was another little yes along life's way. Now, I don't mean to say that God couldn't have led me another way. But I said, okay, Lord, I'll be his servant. I'll be his minister. Like Joshua was Moses' minister. And whatever that means. And that decision that day on that rock was kind of like a peg that you put down on the ground. And whenever you wonder where you are, you can always look back to it. Say, that's right. Oh, that's right. You look back and you see the adventure that God made of it. And I know that, from what I'm told, some of you may be struggling financially. Well, there's still a God in heaven. And your resource is not the navigators, or your parents, or an uncle. It's still God in heaven. And he still does want to do things for you. He's still a gracious God. And he wants to help in time of need. So that's where we look. I remember being in Czechoslovakia talking with a professor, former professor, who had been too active in his witness, so they took away his professorship and made him a researcher,
with the consequent reduction in salary. I said, how do you feel about it? Well, he said, first place, every professor in the university knows why this happened to me, and so that's a testimony. He said, financially, he said, the government may pay my salary, but God meets my needs. So those yeses along life's way, and it makes it's an adventure. It's a struggle at the time, perhaps. And then if you wait long enough, you can come some 30 years later, and you can have your own little show and tell. So you might want to look around the house and see what you want to keep for all these years. Yeah, it looks awful. You know that, Ma? We got to fix that up a little bit. This has been paid in, though, since then, hasn't it? Yeah. I wonder if it needs some Elmer's glue. Most everything we... Yeah, it does, sure enough. Where's my do list here? Elmer's glue. Another one of those little yeses had to do with submission to Doss Trotman. There was no doubt about the fact that Doss loved me. Lucy and I were talking about it, I think, just this week. He really did love me. But he was also tough. In fact, a lot tougher than I thought he needed to be sometimes. It seemed as though I would do 10 things, and 9 were right, and 1 was wrong, and what would I hear about? The 1 was wrong. I mean, it wasn't in a little soft tone of voice either. What? Finally, the time came, I thought I had enough of that. Oh, I tried verses like, it's good for man to bear the yoke in his youth, and that would last me for a couple days. And what tribulation would do for you, and that would last for a few days. But I just got increasingly tired, and thought, well, man, I don't have to do this. I can go somewhere else, and I could. I don't know if I want to continue this or not. It built up in my mind till it became a real crisis issue. So I was up at Hume Lake, California, at this conference ground, and there's a rock, huge boulders out there by the edge of the lake. And I got out on one of those boulders one day and got some time with the Lord and said, Lord, I've had enough of this. I know I don't have to stay with Him. There are other things in this world to do. But somehow or other, I don't know if I knew about surrender or what, I had the fortune or the sense or the guiding of the Spirit to say, well, Lord, what do you want me to do? What shall I do? And through some scriptures that just linked in with other things and providential circumstances in my life, it was very clear that I was to stick with Him, even if it meant to shine His shoes. Well, there was another little yes along life's way. Now, I don't mean to say that God couldn't have led me another way. But I said, okay, Lord, I'll be His servant. I'll be His minister. Like Joshua was Moses' minister. Whatever that means. And that decision that day on that rock was kind of like a peg that you put down on the ground. And whenever you wonder where you are, you can always look back to it and say, that's right. Oh, that's the central point right there. I know I made that. That's a commitment. Well, I mean, look, all I can say is, from my point of view, maybe God would have had some other direction, but look what I would have missed if there hadn't been that yes on that day to the will of God for me in that situation, which I thought was trying, difficult, and sometimes unfair. It's really something when I think of what I would have missed. Well, there are a lot of other things, but I think another aspect of the smaller yeses and the side of the big one of being a follower of Jesus Christ, of going wherever He'll lead, whatever He wants you to do, had to do with separation. I think the older I get, the more I'm getting to be kind of a sentimental old man, really. So just bear with me a little bit. The story is worth telling, but I get a little blubbery sometimes. Don't pay attention to that. But you know, I thought I was going to be, after we left Seattle, I had another surrender, and I won't go into details on that one. Doss wanted me back at headquarters. I thought I'm going to be stuck at headquarters. He was going to China, and he was going here, and I thought, oh, I'm going to be stuck at headquarters. So I had to make a surrender there to be willing to be stuck at headquarters. Well, then he went with the Billy Graham team, and about the second crusade, he took me, and about the third one, he turned it over to me. And then I began to be gone 9 months a year there for about 5 years. That was along about the time Cheryl was born, I think. She's, what, 26 now? Somewhere in there. And I kind of wished I would be stuck at headquarters just a little bit more. But the separation there. And there are various sundry times when I'm sure there were some struggles and yeses to be made. But I think of one. Doss was living, and we were here at the Glen. He had asked me to go to England for 6 months. I think I'd been there 5 months once before. This was the year before. This would be a 6 month stint. Lucy was expecting number six. I was to go over there, set up a follow-up office for England, do consular preparation for a Graham crusade in Scotland, and back down in London. I was to leave just after Christmas, get back, end of May. And the baby is due in February sometime. Well, do you have to do that? He said, if you don't stay home, your children could grow up to serve the devil. Father shouldn't be gone as much as you're gone. Well, I agree. Except for one thing, and that is it the will of God or not? God doesn't call on everybody to do that. And now, can God or can he not take care of your children and your wife? And there are various times, and I brought one of my old Bibles, another relic, in which somewhere in some part of the world, whether in a hotel room in London or one afternoon alone with God by Loch Lomond in Scotland, claiming some scriptures concerning our children and surrendering them and Lucy and re-surrendering them and Lucy to the Lord. One of them, for instance, is over here in Isaiah 49. I got this one from Dave Morkin. But thus saith the Lord, even the captives of the mighty shall be taken away, and the prey of the terrible shall be delivered. For I will contend with him that contendeth with thee, that is the devil, and I will save thy children. This particular time, January, February, March, April 25th, 1954, London. Lord, do this for all of my children. And a prayer request written here in the margin. Well, they're not all going as 100% committed as we would like. Most are. We're great friends with all of them. Except for we wish there were more of a commitment in a case or two. We just have so much to be thankful for. And it's only God. It's the grace of God, right? Huh? I mean, it's the grace of God. God has to do it. And God has. We have seen some most fantastic things of changed lives just in our own family. And somehow or other, God, I've worked with young men and women ever since I was converted and believed that God could change lives, but there came situations in our family when the question came, can God change situation in your own family? It seems to be somehow the bigger test. Like boys. I've been able to accept boys of all kinds until I get interested in my daughter. One of my daughters. I was going to times and as I teasingly call him. But as a result of that time, my attitude about a couple of things. One was about my job. Some years back, I resigned as manager of the universe, and that did make my job easier. But I was still trying to hold the navigator work together. Some people say, now, Lauren, we think you're still trying to encourage me, you're getting along in years, but we need you yet. I appreciate that encouragement.
I think, Lauren, well, you're still the one to hold this work together. So I took that seriously, and I'd stay up late and wake up early trying to figure out ways to hold this work together. And I'm telling you, the centrifugal forces to blow us apart are just there all the time. Nationalism. It isn't finances I want, it's... well, anyway, the underdeveloped nations, poverty, this kind of thing. Philosophies, political things, theological things. And I could tell you right now, there's nobody except God that can hold this work together. But I was working at it. And I began to wilt under that pressure. And so what did I want? We get out. Only to discover that God didn't intend for me to hold this work together. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wakes in vain. And that's true in your household as well as in the navigators. Sure, you do what God wants you to do, but it's God who holds it together. Right? Well, so I got that straight. And then the other one was about conflicts. Oh no, not another conflict. I don't want to go through my whole life just conflicts, you know? Besides, I think it's time for somebody else to have this. You know, I mean, maybe a fresh mind and would be good. I was telling this to Ed Van Dillon, a businessman from California, one day, and he listened to my little complaints, and this was over at the Palmer House. He listened, and when I finished, he looked over at me, and he said one word. And he could say it, and I couldn't tell you how he said it, but he said, "Coward." Well, I don't know if that word can be spirit-led or not, but it was. Yeah, I was just trying to crawl out of it. So finally I came to the place, well, to accept them and to try to really practice James 1, 2 to 4. Count it all joy when you meet various tests. Knowing that they'll do certain things, and that is that they will develop stable, consistent Christian character. Now, I backslide quite a bit on that. But basically, I think my family would say I've been a little more enjoyable guy to be around at home the last 4 or 5 years, having gotten a couple basic surrenders made as the willingness to face yet another conflict, another problem, yet another. But I have to surrender that all the time. This last fall, I had to make a trip, and I was told that, well, an overseas part of the world, well, he just because he's the president, he better not think he'd come over here and tell us what to do, as if I were going to. And then I had some other problems of what I might do or might not do, and I thought, well, phooey, I don't have to subject myself over there to be on trial. I didn't leave anything over there, and I don't need to go back and find it. I'm not forcing myself on anybody. In fact,